welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. The Journey of Hope is a special podcast that's specifically designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. It's also for our friends and our families, the people who love us. And we have a great show for you today. On the program is former Naval Air Commander, Commander John Mark Club, and he has written a book that's entitled Boys Cry Too. This is a very powerful interview, and it has to do with sexual abuse, and it's got some very pertinent information for many of those who listen to the show. And I want to, you know, just kind of put a warning out there that a little parental discretion is probably warranted with this particular program, and we're going to get right to it after this. John Mark Club's coming up in just a second, right here on The Journey of Hope. Commander John Mark Club. John was a Marine in his early life. He went to OCS and was commissioned as an officer in the United States Navy. He became a naval pilot, eventually became an NROTC instructor at the University of Minnesota. He spent 22 years in the military service and then became a commercial pilot where he flies, well, these are the big planes, the 737, the 57, sevens in the Airbus and all that. And John has written a book called Boys Cry Too. John, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad you, I appreciate you having me here, and very honored to be on your show this afternoon. So,
well, thank you. Listen, you're
thanks very much.
You're so welcome, and your book is about how you were abused sexually as a child, and we do have sex offenders that listen, and I thought it would be helpful for offenders to hear about abuse from a victim's perspective. And so let's get a little bit of history first. Where and how did the abuse start? Some background on that.
I was raised by a former Southern Baptist minister who came into my room one night after severely beating my mother, who was trying to defend me, and he brutally raped me. That started a three-year cycle of rape.
Let's talk about how the abuse affected your early childhood. You said 6 years old, I believe. So, were you introverted? Were you making bad grades? How did it affect your life at that point?
Sure. Well, the morning after my father raped me for the first time, I drank a glass of carpet cleaner. I wanted to die. I wanted to kill myself. I didn't know if you could put those kind of words on a six-year-old's thought process, but I knew that I didn't want to be here anymore. I always waited for my mother to rescue me from my father's rape. They were extremely painful. And because of the brutality of the crimes, or the brutality of the acts, I actually suppressed those memories until I was 29 years old. I was always the sad, introverted child who read, because of my mother's inability to protect me from these acts, she became very rageful, and she also, in her impotence to protect me, started to physically abuse me. So I was not only being sexually abused by my father, I was being physically abused by my mother. The fact that I am sitting here talking to you today is a testament to hope, a testament to God's healing powers, and the fact that I am not in prison, the fact that I'm not dead from a drug and alcohol overdose is simply a miracle. As I became older, the rage, you know, what you do to people, and I'm going to assume that everybody's listening has perpetuated a sexual assault on someone. What you do to people is you create an incredible amount of rage. You give them shame. And shame really is the cornerstone of what victims and survivors of abuse have to deal with. Shame, because as children, we internalize whatever happens to us. And when you tell somebody that it's our secret, when you tell somebody that you asked for this, when you tell somebody that you must be gay because otherwise this wouldn't have happened to you, what you do is you create an incredible amount of shame. And what that shame does is it makes us act out in shame and in shameful ways. We act out. And the three things that I was always addicted to were sex, alcohol, and anger. So as I became an adolescent, I became more and more angry. I became more and more angry at the world. I had my first sexual experience with another boy at the age of 15, which led to great feelings of disgust. I always had a bottle of vodka hidden in my closet to help me deal with what was going on in my childhood. And that created more isolation. It created more depression. It created more feelings of helplessness. And as I became, in high school, I was able to draw from the world into a world of reading and to a world of books. So I became addicted to books, and that was really my salvation. I also was an active member of my Southern Baptist Church, and I got just enough positive reinforcement from the folks that I went to church with to keep me going, to keep my hope alive, to keep me going. Because what you do is you destroy, you can't take away somebody's hope, because the hope is always there, but what you can do is cover it up with shame, which you cover it up with the side effects and the effects of these acts. Mm-hmm. It got into my way in my interpersonal relationships. I could go for a very short period of time without letting my anger out, which was putting on the good face. But eventually, all of that anger and that rage would come out in one way or another in a very self-destructive way. And Ronnie, please interrupt with any questions that you might have that might come up. Please don't sure. let me turn this into a monologue.
No, go.
But it affects you physically. I have had body memories of my father's rapes for the last 30 years, especially on Christmas Day. I cannot go to sleep on Christmas Eve because I, as a boy, would lay awake and wait for the next attack. I hate going into a darkened bedroom by myself. I have served in the Marine Corps. I have served as a naval aviator, willing to put my life on the line and willing to go into harm's way, and I can't go into my bedroom at night mm-hmm. and fall asleep by myself. So I've filled up my life with empty relationships, with multiple sex partners. I've had over 250 sex partners, both men and women, because I had sex for three different reasons. Mm-hmm. I had sex, first of all, to get even with my mother. I had sex to recreate the very sick relationship, physical relationship I had with my father, and then I would have sex just in order to beat myself up so that I could feel bad about myself once again. The feelings of helplessness, the feelings of hopelessness, when an adult does this to somebody as a child, they destroy all of their trust. I've had far too many relationships in my life where I have trusted the wrong kind of people, and I've had relationships in my life where the people who have been kind and gentle and loving with me, I have not trusted, because I've never trusted their motives, because I always thought that a touch meant that was that sex was coming soon after. And my experiences are not any different from any of the other survivors. I'm very active with lots of survivor groups, and to a man and a woman, this is not gender specific. This is man, male, and female, what these acts do to somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
I have had the shame, I've had the depression, what these acts create in people's lives. 87% of all runaways, 90% of all prostitutes, over 90% of all the people that are in prison today have sex abuse in their history.
Mm-hmm.
It creates bulimia, it creates anorexia, it creates self-mutilation. People will cut themselves, they'll tattoo themselves, their entire body, they'll gain 30, 40 pounds of weight. 65% of all obese women in America report sex abuse. The toll on our society at large is incredible. It costs hundreds of billions of dollars. So that simple act of shoving your hand down somebody's pants, inserting a finger in somebody's vagina, raping a boy, fondling a boy, it doesn't matter whether it happens one time or it happens multiple times like it did to me, it creates the same kinds of effects, alcoholism, drug addiction, because of the feelings of shame, because of the feelings of no self-esteem, no self-regard. You put yourself in positions where you are victimized over and over again. That's what it does to a human life, Rodney.
Mm-hmm. Those are amazing. No, that's fine. Those are amazing statistics that you have there as well. And I'm just curious, after the abuse stopped with your father, what was your relationship like with him?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it is that perpetrators and their victims are very entwined. I was a military policeman when I was in the Marine Corps. But one of the things that struck me most when I was at MP school was that when you walk into a domestic violence situation, mm-hmm. look for the parent that the kid is clinging closest to, and that's the parent that's abusing the kid.
Wow.
And it took me 23, I've been in therapy for 23 years, Rodney.
Mm-hmm.
And I credit therapy, 23 years at $100 an hour. Add that up sometime.
Okay?
Weekly
wow.
therapy. I credit therapy with saving my life also, because otherwise I would have been this inconsistent, angry, raging person that my parents, they were both culpable, but my father was the one who was most seriously culpable in all of this. But the relationship is a very thick, codependent. I don't have all of the therapist words for it, but it is very codependent, and it's very intertwined in a very dysfunctional way. Is how I can best describe it.
Let me stop you there for just a second. Now, John, I in no way intend to minimize what your father did to you. Okay, I want to preface this with that, but
sure.
I want to ask you: have you learned maybe why he did those things? I mean, did he have issues with trust, or the issues that have been brought out in you because of the abuse? Were those issues in him at that time? What have you learned about that?
Well, the things that I've learned about that, Ron, and that's an excellent question, and by no means do I feel like it's minimizing. There are wide and varied opinions about this, and one of the opinions is that a very small percentage of pedophiles were sexually abused themselves. However, what a lot of pedophiles will do in court is they will use the "I was an abused child" card in order to try to garner sympathy. Okay? Mm-hmm. But when they get to prison, 90 to 95% of those pedophiles recant that they were never abused themselves. But what that does is that re-victimizes me, because as a man, that puts the stink of sex abuser on me, that if I've been abused, then I will somehow become an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Male survivors do not become abusers any more than a female who's been raped becomes a rapist. Does that make sense?
It does.
Am I making sense then?
Right.
Okay. But because we're men, it adds to the stigma of why we do not come out and talk about this. 1 in 6 men, and I'll get to your question. Just let me. Just,
sure. Yeah.
Go off on a tangent for just a second, if you'll humor me. 1 in 6 men are sexually assaulted in this country before the age of 18. 1 in 3 women are. That means we have about 80 million Americans out there walking around thinking that they are alone, that they have been the only victim, that they somehow brought this on themselves because they were dressed too scantily, or maybe because I am gay and I sent off those gay vibes. The reason that a pedophile perpetuates this act is because a pedophile perpetuates this act. And what I have, you know, in a spiritual way, it's a rotten soul. It's a soul that is allowed to be rotted because they have lost their path through their higher power or through their God. And that's the only explanation that I can give to you as to why a pedophile, you'll have to ask a pedophile, mm-hmm. why they would choose to attack a child.
I'm sure.
Buy this,
Jim, I'm sure.
Never,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I'm sure that your father had issues, though, that were going unaddressed in his life. That's kind of the point I'm trying to get to here is, you know, and let me say it again, I'm not minimizing what, you know, the guy should be in prison. That's my view on it. But he must have had demons that were things like anger and trust, and he must have had those kinds of things going on in his life that led to him, plus an unhealthy sexual attraction, obviously, that led him to rape a child, let alone his own son. So I guess what I was just trying to get at is those people have serious issues too, right?
Well, absolutely.
Obviously.
The family legend has it that his grandfather abused him. He was raised by a sadistic, out-of-control alcoholic. My grandmother was 16 years or 20 years her oldest junior. I think, you know, she had her own issues. He was raised by a father that was sadistic to him, that was a raging alcoholic. He was a child of the Depression. He grew up with newspaper on his walls. But the family legend has it that his grandfather abused him. So
okay.
He's one of those pedophiles, you know, and I'm not going to take a stand either way as to if every pedophile has been abused by somebody else or if this is just a unique situation with a very small percentage, but he falls into that he was abused by his grandfather.
If someone who perpetrates this kind of crime gets the issues that are helping them, you know, pushing them into making those kinds of horrible decisions, if they get those issues addressed, and this was the main thing I was trying to get to, that all hope is not lost for a human being like that. Now, they may be dangerous to society because of their sexual attraction and they need to be locked up and taken off the streets. But I guess, you know, the bottom line that I was trying to get to, Jim, is that if someone
is wanting to act in that way and can identify the issues that are causing them to make those decisions, that their life is not over with, that if they...
Yeah, and as you know, Ronnie, as a as a Christian, I believe that no human is irreparable. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at me. You know, I have done lots and lots of things that I'm not proud of. I have cheated. I have lied. I have manipulated. I have had sex far too many times. Abused alcohol, and so yes, if Amazing Grace is truly a remarkable song, and I don't think that any human soul is lost unless they choose to live in the anger and the hardness that prevents them from connecting with society. And I think, you know, we talk about the shame that a perpetrator puts on their victim. I think the pedophiles deal with a lot of shame themselves. And when they start to look at, they act, I acted out in shameful ways, not against children, but against myself. Mm-hmm. They choose to act out in shameful ways against other human beings, mm-hmm. not empathizing with the way that they, with what their actions are going to do to another life. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
I noticed that you mentioned on your website that you continued to spiral out of control until you hit rock bottom. Do you mind me asking what was rock bottom for you? Do you mind?
Rock bottom for me was my third divorce. Okay. A wife that, in many ways, was the worst parts of my mother and my father, who herself was very physically abusive, emotionally abusive, mentally abusive, who was attacking me in every way that she could possibly attack me in order to get custody of her children, to destroy me, to try to destroy me as a human being, as a man, as a father. And so I had, you know, the airline industry has not been the easiest one. In the early 2000s, I took over a 50% pay cut. I was going through my third divorce. I had no support because I myself had become, allowed my anger and my hardness to rule my life. I was looking at losing my children, who I adore, and so at that moment, there was no place else for me to go but up. I found the best therapist that I have ever had through the employee assistance program where I work, and so I started climbing out of that cave, or I started climbing out of that pit that I had fallen into finally. And through writing Boys Cry 2, which I found, it is a completely honest account, has soul level honesty of what these acts do to a human life. And I would encourage everybody that has ever done something like this to somebody or has had this done to them to read this book, because it is eye-popping. And it's honesty. The people who have read it, who are survivors themselves, say, how do you know how I felt my entire life? It's like you've been in my head. And it is really, you know, it's the first time a man has ever opened up like this. That allowed a lot of my demons to surface and to be exercised once and for all. And it still took about a year and a half after I finished writing this book for all of those echoes to finally quiet down. And for me to get to a place where I could say, this is behind me. I had my 50th birthday on September 2nd. Mm-hmm. And I finally had my first birthday without fear. Okay? I'm still working through the Christmas thing. Mm-hmm. This last Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, I've had, you know, I had another body memory. I couldn't fall asleep. I'm still working on the Christmas thing. But for the first time in my life, I had my first birthday where I did it without fear. It was literally my first birthday.
John, it took a lot of courage for you to write this book, and I really appreciate what you've done. I think that the people listening to this show are going to appreciate it as well. I have one more question for you real quick. Where are you at with your dad today?
I haven't spoken to him since 2000. It took me, Ronnie, it took me from 1989 until 2002 for all of my memories to fully come to me about how, because the attacks were so brutal. In 2001, I severed my relationship with him. I still had a relationship with him because I really had not remembered fully what had happened to me until then. But since 2001, I've not had a relationship with him because he will not come to me. I have forgiven him. Don't get me wrong. I've forgiven both of my parents for what they did. But he will not come to me and complete remorse, say, I was wrong, I did wrong, please forgive me. It's not in his character and it's not in his makeup to do that. And until he does that, there will be no relationship.
I think you're probably handling that right. You know, like I said, I'm not a therapist, but it just takes enormous courage for you to forgive him for that. Commander John Mark Klebb, the book is called Boys Cry 2. I highly recommend it as a model for those of us who want to move on from whatever our demons might be that haunt us, be it the prison experience or abuse as a child. John, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Rodney. I really appreciate it. I'm honored. And I would say, you know, abuse does not have, my tagline is, abuse does not have to be a life sentence, Rodney. You can heal. And I want, you know, I want your listeners, if you have perpetrated these kind of crimes, there is no hatred or anger towards you. God, and as a Christian, okay, God is willing and waiting for you to talk to him again. That's the only thing I can say. The hardness and the anger that has led you to wherever you are will leave you bitter and alone. And so I encourage you to do whatever you need to do, whatever it takes to find a relationship with whatever you consider a higher power for the forgiveness for yourself, the forgiveness for your victims, the shame that you've felt over your acts, whatever it takes to get to that point. And abuse does not have to be a life sentence.
John, thanks again for being here. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
Thank you for being with us today. We'll be right back here next Thursday for a new edition of the Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.